Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth.
Hello, and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stripinczyk. In this episode, we'll feature two presentations by panelists at the 2010 conference of the Illinois Coalition for Justice, Peace, and the Environment, held in the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center in Urbana, Illinois, on April 9th and 10th, 2010. The conference held a number of panels of topics related to justice, peace, and the environment. We'll hear from presenters at the panel entitled Transforming Social Relations. In this first presentation, we'll hear from Paul Street, an independent radical democratic policy researcher, journalist, historian, and speaker based in Iowa City, Iowa, and Chicago, Illinois. Paul Street was the director of research at the Chicago Urban League from 2000 through 2005 and is the author of four books, including Barack Obama and the Future of American Politics.
You know, with all this critical left writing I've done on the Obama phenomena and presidency during the last 3 years, and I'm probably Obama's most persistent, if I'm not his most prominent critic on the left. People are sometimes surprised to learn my main problem with a lot of liberals and progressives I know is not that they've tended to be too uncritical of Obama and the people around him. I have a much bigger and different difficulty, is that so many have tended to buy into this very narrow definition of the only politics that matters as being about these quadrennial, corporate-crafted, big money, big media, candidate-centered electoral extravaganzas, you know, that pass as the only politics that matter in this country. I believe the changes we need to avert catastrophe to build a human civilization cannot be limited to the periodic reshuffling of the names and the faces and parties in nominal power. It has to go deeper than replacing one brand or shape or color of corporate and military captive office holders with another such brand at once every 2, 4, or 8 years. As many of us on the left, myself included, have been predicted, there's been more continuity than change in the transition from Bush to Obama. Beneath the great rebranding, beyond shifts in style and substance. What does that mean? Oh, there's a red escort alarm. By the way, there's also a car in the parking lot that simultaneously has a single-payer bumper sticker and Obama bumper sticker. And I would suggest in year two that it's time to scrape one of you. You got to choose. Let me put it that way. You got to go with one of those. Beyond shifts in style, in partisan rule, and beyond very symbolically powerful and significant color change in the Oval Office, you know, there lives on the same unelected and interrelated dictatorships of money and empire, the same corporate state, the same deadly global militarism, the same ecocidal assault on a livable environment, the same gender oppression, the same far-from post-racial world in which blacks and Latinos and Native Americans still live in harshly separate and unequal circumstances, even as white folks in Northbrook watch Obama and root for or against Tiger Woods. Would I say watch Obama? Watch Oprah and vote for Obama. Looking back on the administration's performance to date, I'm reminded of something that crazy John Edwards said over and over again during the Iowa caucus campaign. We all know what happened with John, but he said something that I was there. I covered the campaign in Iowa that just drove town hall audiences absolutely nuts, and they'd stand up and applaud and go nuts about it. He said it was a complete fantasy to think any kind of progressive change is ever going to happen by sitting down at a negotiating table with big corporations and with Republicans. He said only an epic fight with corporate power, with concentrated wealth, will bring progressive change. And I remember in 07 in a debate in Iowa, Obama said, retorted to that, we don't need more heat, we need more light. Again, we don't need more heat, we need more light. That was Wall Street talking, okay? Not a progressive community activist or a progressive in other kind. And we've seen who his bringers of light are and were as Obama entered the corridors of power. They've been people like Larry Summers and Timothy Geithner from Goldman Sachs and Ben Bernanke from the Wall Street aristocracy and the Republican Defense Secretary and arch-militarist Robert Gates and so on and so forth. As we move into the second year of the empire's new clothes, we get to realize again, maybe it's not actually about running for president, and maybe it's not about getting behind people or about running for president. Maybe it's not about trying to scale the pyramids of national and global power, which you can't do without advance prior approval from the hidden primary of the ruling class, the aforementioned unelected and interrelated dictatorships. Maybe it's about being and staying an actual, real, live community organizer and activist, a labor activist, women's rights activist, environmental activist, affordable housing activist, anti-war activist, an anti-corporatist, an immigrant rights activist, or any and all of the above. Recently, we mourned the passing of the great radical American historian Howard Zinn. And I wanted to give a quote from an article that Zinn wrote against what he called the election madness that he saw, quote, engulfing the entire society, including the left, in early 2008. The election frenzy, Howard said, seizes the country every 4 years because we've all been brought up to believe that the most important act a citizen can engage in is to go to the polls and choose one of the two mediocrities who have already been chosen in advance for us. And Zinn said, would I support one candidate against another? He goes, yeah. For 2 minutes, the amount of time it takes to pull the lever in the voting booth. But before and after those 2 minutes, our time, our energy should be spent educating, agitating, organizing our fellow citizens in the workplace, in the neighborhoods, in the schools. Our objective should be to build painstakingly, patiently, but energetically, a movement that when it reaches a certain critical mass would shake whoever is in the White House, in Congress, into changing national policy on matters of war and justice. I just spent a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks in Ecuador, and I would like to suggest that progressive gringos up in North America take a more Latin American attitude towards the relationship between movements and politics. We can bemoan the standard predictable, I predicted it, so did a bunch of other people on the left, Coburn last night that spoke down here, the standard militarism and the neoliberalism of the Democrats. We can bemoan that until we're blue in the face. We can cite all the good public opinion data we want, showing that most Americans are not, as the corporate media claims, center-right, cautious, you know, quote-unquote pragmatists, which is the greatest thing you could ever be, according to the New York Times and the Washington Post, but actually left progressives. We can cite all that data showing that most of them oppose corporate rule and the Pentagon system and so forth. That's all great, but our anger and all that good progressive public opinion out there is not being forged to anything like a remotely adequate degree into effective organizations. It's not being channeled into the sorts of popular, determined fighting. And, you know, yes, angry rank-and-file movements that would have to be factored into the calculations of power in the ways that, for example, in Ecuador, even a relatively left president, Rafael Correa, has to. The people up in the Andes who can come down out of there when you privatize too much of their water and do other nasty things, just come down and shut down the freaking cities. They just surround them, and the trucks can't get in, and they can't get out. There's similar things go on in Bolivia and other Latin American countries. Our social movements simply don't strike any of that kind of Ecuadorian or Bolivian or Howard Zinnian fear in the hearts of leaders right now. Some of this isn't our fault. The power elite invests a remarkable amount of social and political energy and capital in dividing and defeating and demonizing and in marginalizing progressive forces and ideas in this country where the stakes of wealth and power are still the highest of anywhere they are in the world. There's an enormous investment in keeping us weak and divided. Some of the problem is our fault, and we need to determine what part of that is that we have created and what we can do about that, whatever the balance between our fault and their fault in creating this what a lot of political scientists now call this democracy deficit in this country. And all that means is that everything you believe and that most of us believe, majorities believe, like public health insurance option, like single payer, which had majority support for many years, is irrelevant in the actual political policy process, even with a so-called liberal Democrat in there. We have to work to overcome it, not just for ourselves, not just for the United States, but I would argue for the entire world. Noam Chomsky wrote something in 1966 that I think still stands up. The level of culture that can be attained in the United States, Chomsky said, is a matter of life and death for large masses of suffering humanity. That's still true, and this really hit me when I was down in Ecuador too, but just even turning on the TV, how incredibly powerful the United States is. Building the moral and institutional capacity to see, to expose, and to resist American empire and inequality incorporated is a matter of life and death at home and abroad. There's something else to say, I think. As I've been arguing on ZNet and as I argue in my next book, the popular disenchantment that results from the gap between Obama and the Democrats' progressive campaign promises and the reality of Obama's corporatist and imperialist performance as an actual policymaker, and just the general alienation and disenchantment and anger, incredible anger that's out there because of the inequities of capitalism, can become dangerous in the absence of us building progressive movement capacity and building a more responsive and democratic political culture, because popular resentment abhors a vacuum. Without progressive institutions and ideas to channel it, legitimate citizen and working class anger under Obama, Democrats, be the same if Hillary was in, and be the same if John Edwards was the president, can feed a dodgy right populist rebellion that's proto-fascistic in some ways. On the hard right, there's no shortage of high-wattage demagogues that are ready, willing, and able 24/7 to advance crazy but forthright and angry answers for anxious and oppressed people with real grievances. Listen to Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and the rest of those people. You know, if reasonably angry progressives do not exist to give forthright and actionable answers to legitimately angry and aggrieved people, it's going to be left to some very dangerous and reactionary forces to capture and channel it all in very authoritarian ways. Please allow me one final reflection. Nearly a month after Obama was elected, more than a month before he was inaugurated, a militant, largely immigrant-based union local in Chicago occupied the door and window factory of an absconding employer and demanded what was due them. The union and supporters mounted an incredibly effective public relations campaign highlighting the disconnect between the massive federal bailouts that were being made to parasitic, too big to fail banks and the economic misery being imposed on ordinary working Americans. They got bailed out, we got sold out was the slogan. It's a very important moment. This quintessentially working class and unapologetically populist struggle quickly, almost overnight, became a highly popular cause celebre, not just in Chicago, but across the country and internationally. It held the media cycle for 2 days. I know because it kicked me off of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, and I was stuck at Newark Airport watching the TV. Listen, I know I'm going 30 seconds more over. The Republican door and window workers didn't wait to get the okay or the approval or the orders from the top down from Obama or any politician or elected officials or with electoral considerations in mind. They developed the capacity to undertake a direct action at the shop floor, community level, and they forced events from the bottom up. They even got Wall Street Barry Obama to endorse their action, which is, I think, is the most progressive thing he's done in his entire political career. It's been all downhill since. That's where the real and relevant hope for change can be found, not in the master's elections candidates, not in the pull of lobbyists, not in the promises and actions of politicians. Thank you very much.
That was Paul Street speaking at the 2010 conference of the Illinois Coalition for Justice, Peace, and the Environment, held in Urbana, Illinois, on April 9th and 10th, 2010. The next presentation we'll hear is by Cristobal Cavazos, a co-founder of Immigrant Solidarity DuPage, a group whose mission is to educate, unite, and mobilize the community around the rights and struggles of Latinos in DuPage County, Illinois. Cavazos is a public speaker, published journalist, musician, and artist who has been active in popular campaigns in Chicago in the struggle for social justice.
So it's been noted, I organized, we have our group in DuPage County, so we're used to being behind enemy lines, so it's good to be here with some friends. So what's going on is noted in the program, an immigrant rights activist in DuPage County, Illinois. We trace our history back ultimately to the 2006 mega marches, which I believe if we look at that and if we think about that was really an exciting, powerful time in the history of people's movements that us in Immigrant Solidarity DuPage have seeked to build upon. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's been going on. Now, as we know, the Obama administration entered office almost a year and a half ago. They came in with 70%, about 67% of the Latino vote. They co-opted phrases from Cesar Chavez, the United Farm Workers, the Si Se Puedes, the Yes We Cans, bringing in Latino leaders or a lot of so-called Latino leaders, forging organizations very top-down, and they came across with the Latino vote, but with a very important promise, the promise of immigration reform. So he came in. I have to say we're very proud in the Latino community of the symbolic victory that was the entrance of Obama, but we'll see that it was not a substantive victory. So let's talk about a little bit about what's gone on in the past year. Since entering office, Mr. Obama and his administration, as a community organizer, we've seen nothing but things go from bad to worse. There's been 388,000 deportations in the past year. This is in 1 year. In the Bush administration, it was 365,000. It's gone from bad to worse, as I note. A number of immigrants incarcerated in many times privatized prisons is at 450,000. And this is just huge. In DuPage County, I don't know an immigrant family who hasn't lost somebody. It's really been a holocaust on the immigrant worker community, and after just a pounding for the past few years. $6 billion, while Obama has froze spending on public services, ICE budget, this is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has been at $6 billion. This is everything from harassing and workplaces and private raids, all sorts of tricks. They're looking for people with criminal antecedents and records and going in and looking for them and just scooping up everybody there. And I will say, given these numbers, and if we couple that with a close to 20% unemployment in the Latino community, it's really we're at a crisis situation. Now, last week, a couple weeks ago, in Washington, D.C., there was a big mega march. There must have been 250,000 people in the streets of D.C. Certainly, from people I've noted, one of the largest marches in history. But if we look about what was behind this mobilization, there was an organization named Reform Immigration for America, RIFA, which in a lot of ways symbolizes what's wrong here. It symbolizes what's wrong, why raids have gone up since the Obama administration, why unemployment is up, why ICE has a $6 billion budget while other funding for social services has been cut. RIFA is ultimately a group that has been funded to get some kind of immigration reform passed. Some of their money is questionable. It's been noted they have up to a $75 million budget to get people mobilized in the streets. They were originally for the Gutierrez bill, which certainly I didn't find. There was much to not like in that bill, but with a sleight of hand over the past few months, they're now from a much more dangerous bill called the Schumer-Graham bill. Now, this Schumer-Graham bill, which RIFA, this Democratic Party organization, got four major components that we're very concerned about in the movement. Of course, they had this march in D.C., throwing across this vague word, immigration reform. Now, immigration reform means something different for Walmart than it does for people like David Bacon or Nativo Lopez. What RIFA is offering us with this Schumer-Graham bill is four components: a biometric ID system. It's a card where we're all going to be having a national ID with DNA information encoded in this card. One of the very dangerous things, maybe even more dangerous, is a new guest worker program that's being promoted. This is comparable to the Bracero program from 1945 to 1964, which brought in people, and it was basically a modern-day form of debt peonage. This bill that the Democrats, that Obama has publicly supported, is going to induce more militarization of the border. And I have some friends in Border Angels. There's been thousands upon thousands of deaths at the border, forcing people to cross at more and more remote, dangerous points. And the fourth component is a pathway to legalization, which learning English and paying your bills and some other vague, minutia is going to be there. Now, with this bill and having basically a cattle march in D.C. with 250,000 people with a very conservative, moderate leadership, fueling all these people onto the streets, we're seeing something exciting going on right now. We're seeing the disillusionment with the Obama administration. This is a thunderbolt has hit. The Latino community, I was at the march in D.C., and when Mr. Obama came onto the screen after speaker upon speaker of how we need to get the health reform bill passed, or the insurance industry reform bill passed first, then we're going to get to immigration reform. Finally, the crescendo was Mr. Obama himself came out and talked, and while there were many cheers, there were also many boos, especially where I was. And I find those boos as the dawning, the echoes of new possibilities in our movement, as I refer to 2006. 2006 was a truly extraordinary time. People were leaving work to march on the streets. There were the possibility of a deportation, a mass deportation under the Sessenbrenner bill. And there was an extremely working class, all people's front that was spawned at that time. Of course, some of these more right-wing Democratic Party elements were already trying to imbue the movement. We were marching legalization for all and no human is illegal, while they were trying to get us to march, to chant out, "Today we march, tomorrow we vote," of course, in reference to getting a Democratic president enacted. So there was a time of great militancy, but the illusion starting to be fueled, being planted into our movement. Now, if we come to 2010, after all these horrible statistics I just mentioned, and we see that the Obama administration winning with a promise to enact immigration reform within the first year, and that year has since lapsed, we see in our group, Immigrant Solidarity DuPage, which is a grassroots organization, a spark for a possibly resurgence of what happened in 2006. Mr. Street referenced the Republic Window Workers' Strike. Many of those workers came from that milieu of the 2006 mega marches in Chicago. Now, what we've been doing is trying to basically break these illusions while doing and enacting some real grassroots base work. Now, we have always been for legalization for all. We've always been for no guest worker program and no militarization of the border. But we see, and the people in the group see, we're not going to win it with the people in office. We need to be mobilizing on the streets, and that's what we're doing. It does not look hopeful, even with this Schumer Graham bill, that there's going to be any kind of legalization reform this year. It's, in fact, one of the United States ambassador to Mexico promised Calderon a few weeks ago that there would not be, Calderon, the president of Mexico, there would not be an immigration reform this year. And being that's what's in the cards, this Graham-Schumer bill, we're happy. We're happy. The lack of an immigration reform for the Democrats are going to give us and what we're being present doesn't make us sad. It makes us glad. And we're going to renew the streets. Now, there's some exciting things happening that we're going to be building upon. The grassroots struggle is going to be front and foremost in our mission. There's a movement for sanctuary cities. And this is not a national. These are cities that have come together and say there will not be deportations. There will not be 365,000 deportations in our city. We are not going to allow this. We're a community, and we're one, and we're workers, and we're not going to allow our undocumented brothers to be treated, to their rights to be violated, and their human rights. That's one of the exciting things, the sanctuary. Another thing, in New Haven, Connecticut, has been mentioned, there's an ID card. This ID card allows anybody there to have a job, with Social Security number or not. This is something that we're looking at in the movement. At the same time, all kinds of local, the Polimigra is the police, 287G, a police, immigration, customs enforcement alliance. It's been passed in many cities across the country where, very sadly, a policeman can stop somebody and in addition to asking for their license and their ID, can ask them for their green card. And this is coming from Bush, but it's been enhanced with Obama under the name of Secure Communities. So what we're looking for on the base is in DuPage County, in places like Chicago, there's a great many of wonderful immigration activists in the city of Chicago and across the nation. We're working together, and in fact, I have a letter which I'm going to put out in the back. For the past few months, we've been working on drafting what we want immigration reform to look like in the grassroots community. We formed a national grassroots network, Grassroots Justice Alliance, with some people like David Bacon, who I've noticed, Nativo Lopez, Carlos Arango in Chicago, true community activists, independent of partisan politics. And we're looking for what ultimately is going to be the soul for us for any kind of immigration reform: human rights and labor mobility. And I say that human rights and labor mobility. And this is where all we're hearing from Gutierrez and from Schumer and from Graham is national security and enforcement. That's completely alien to our movement. We're a people's movement. We're a movement for justice. And with the human rights and the human rights platform and the right to labor mobility, we're going to keep organizing our communities while talking about the root causes of why people are coming in the first place. U.S. economic policy to Latin America, plans that the Obama administration support and fund, like Plan Colombia, which has gone on to slaughter union activists and all kinds of community activists in Colombia, breaking of strikes in Mexico, in Canania, in Sonora. We're going to work with these movements in a true united front for human justice, human rights, and labor mobility for all. Thank you very much.
That was Cristobal Cavazos speaking at the 2010 conference of the Illinois Coalition for Justice, Peace, and the Environment, held in Urbana, Illinois, on April 9th and 10th, 2010. The full audio of all of the panels of the conference are online at the website of the Chicago Independent Media Center at chicago.indymedia.org. Indie Media is spelled I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.